Hello, listeners. Yamina here. Welcome to the Dr. GV Sierra podcast. Before we dive into this episode, I have a few announcements to make. First, I'd like to thank you all for listening in every week to these podcast episodes. It's been 4 years since we started recording podcast episodes. Actually, February 18th marks the fourth anniversary of recording our first episode with Dr. Paul Insel. This month, we also launched the Dr. GPCR University program to provide courses and content on all aspects of GPCR research to support our community. To kick off this new initiative, we partnered with Dr. Terry Kinakin, who teaches the course Applying Pharmacology to Drug Discovery. Due to an overwhelming response and demand for this course, we have decided to bring it back later on this year, so stay tuned. To get more information about the Dr. GPCR University and what we do, please join the ecosystem for free today at drgpcr.com. What are you doing on April 22nd and 23rd this year? Join me and our GPCR colleagues for the inaugural Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs meeting taking place in Birmingham in the UK. This event will bring together scientists from both academia and industry to exchange data, technologies, and ideas in the field of GPCRs. Some key topics include the latest GPCR signaling methodologies, metabolite sensing GPCR biology, novel endocrine mediators, and GPCR activation structures. This meeting is organized by BioScientifica and endorsed by the Society of Endocrinology. We are very grateful for BioScientifica for having the opportunity to partner with them. I will be there in person. And we will also have a Dr. GPCR booth. So stop by the booth, say hi, and hopefully you'll enjoy the meeting as well. Mark your calendars for the next season of the Dr. GPCR Symposia. And more specifically, mark your calendar for our first event of this year on March 15th. This first symposium will cover the topic of GPCR activation and signaling. We will have talks. We will also be able to accommodate posters on Zoom using the breakout rooms. You can visit the symposia page, which is already up with the latest speaker information to stay up to date and get to know our current Irish speakers. If you'd like to give a talk or present a poster, please email us at hello@drgpcr.com. We will not be doing poster selection. Everybody is welcome to present their poster. We have 99 breakout rooms, so we can accommodate 99 posters. And now let's dive into this episode. Hello, everyone. This is Yamina from Dr. GPCR. Welcome to 2024. And I'm excited to start off the year with this podcast episode with our guest, Dr. Claudia Schaubert. Claudia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me and inviting me.
Thank you. And you're our first this year.
Very
So
good.
very exciting. I think we are at episode 140 some 43 or 44. So we've come a long way. How are you? How was your holiday break?
I'm very good. I had a great relaxing holiday break with family and a very small circle of my family and my husband's family. And the kids were very excited. It's been a great Christmas, and yeah, it's been really, really nice.
I'm very glad. So could you please start at the beginning and introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what do you do?
My name is Claudia Stoibert, and I'm working in Leipzig as a group leader at the Rudolf Schönheimer Institute of Biochemistry. And I'm working on GPCRs, like all of your guests, of course. And I'm especially interested in those that are activated by metabolites because I'm really fascinated by these connections that we actually have all this metabolism occurring all the time and eating stuff and, producing metabolites, microbiota that produce my metabolites, and that this actually is a way to communicate between cells, not just the hormones, and the neurotransmitters that we've known for some time now.
That's so interesting. We could talk about it in a bit. Did you always know that you wanted to be a scientist?
No, I didn't know that always. When I was about 16 years old, my grandmother, she died of cancer, and that was kind of the time when I wanted to do something. I wanted to cure cancer. That was my great goal. And Yeah, that's when it started. So I was about 16 and I first wanted to be a pharmacist because I thought that would be the way to go to actually, develop drugs and stuff. But then I did an internship in a pharmacy and the guy there, he was really nice and he told me, if you really want to develop drugs and think about these kind of things, then maybe pharmacy is not the right study. You should rather do medicine or biochemistry. So I ended up doing biochemistry. And I'm not curing cancer, but well.
Well, you might be curing something else. I mean, I think it's very important to learn more about what metabolites do on our system, and obviously through our favorite receptors, which are GPCRs.
Yes, exactly.
So you've done, I assume, an undergrad in biochemistry and then followed up by graduate studies also in
Yes.
biochemistry.
Yes, it was not, we did not have a bachelor master system back then. I
Okay.
started studying in 2000. So there was basically just the option to do biochemistry. I specialized in the main part of the studies in pharmaceutical chemistry. So that was kind of the special part that we could choose. But otherwise, it's a undergraduate and graduate degree in biochemistry that I did.
Interesting. What
Yes.
drove you to doing a PhD?
Well, different things. First of all, it was also a time when professors told you, like in the first lecture you ever visited in biochemistry, that you could not get a job without just a master's degree. So it was, they really, pushed that very hard. We were lots of people, and it was always, you can't become anything without that PhD. That was the one thing. And I was during my graduate studies, I was doing an internship too. I went to Copenhagen when I first also got to know GPCRs better. So that was when I got excited about that. And I went there another time. So altogether about a year, I was in Copenhagen in the lab of Tue Schwarz and working with Birgitte Holst. She was back then postdoc in his lab. And they got me really excited about science. So I wanted to do that too and ask them also and other people around there whom I could go to do my master's first of all in Leipzig and then maybe a PhD. And first of all, the master's. I mean, I had to do this, how's it called? I had to write a thesis, a master thesis, of
Yeah.
course, when I got back from Copenhagen. And back then, Thorsten Schöneberg, he was just starting as a professor here in Leipzig. And I went to him and I stayed there because he was back then also in the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology. And I really liked that connection, thinking about GPCRs from this evolutionary perspective and thinking about, how does it fit together? So yeah, these different kinds of aspects, I guess, made me staying and doing science and GPCRs.
Yeah, and then after we can come back to the internship. I'm very interested in hearing more about when was the first time you heard about GPCRs. It seems like it was during that internship with Tue Schwarz. But then, so after your PhD, you moved on to do a postdoc.
Well, yes, I mean, during my PhD, I had two kids. So my son was born like in the middle of my PhD and my daughter just when I was finished. And back then, I knew that I wanted to do a little bit more science, but I wasn't so sure if it's gonna be a career that I'm good enough to pursue, I would say. So when I was at home with my daughter, I wrote postdoc applications, but actually not to people that I knew and that were in the GPCR field, but I wanted to try something different.
Yeah.
And well, I succeeded in getting the postdoc position in Umeå. It's in the north of Sweden, and where I did metabolomics analysis. So we did LC-MS-based metabolomics of cancer cells and bacterial cells and stuff like that. And I really liked that a lot. But I also wrote grants applications here in Germany. So I wrote to the DFG, which is the biggest funding agency, I would say, in Germany, a grant together with my supervisor, Thorsten. And we also got that grant, so it kind of was okay, I can do both. And yeah, that I guess both of these things helped me to stay where I am now and in science, to get money and to get to know something very different.
So you actually did both,
Yes,
correct?
I kind of supervised the project from Sweden in Germany. So there was a student, not a student, a postdoc employed on that project. She was working on trace Amynes receptors back then here. And I was doing the postdoc myself in Sweden on metabolomics and cancer and these kind of things. Yes.
Wow, for someone who didn't know she was good enough to do this, you actually managed to get funding in
Yeah.
Germany, supervise someone, go do a postdoc, learn something new, and then come back.
Yeah, I was surprised myself that it is possible. But yeah.
Wow. Okay, I have tears in my eyes because you started out by saying, well, I'm not sure, I wasn't sure. Wow, that is really an amazing accomplishment. Wow.
Thank you.
Plus, with two kids, I mean, I have two as well, and it's such a juggling experience
Well, I
to have.
must say, what really helped was the childcare system in Sweden, because my kids, they were 1 and 3 back then, and they have a really affordable childcare system where you can have your children and they are in really, really good care. I mean, that helped, of course, a lot. And my husband, definitely.
No, I actually you're right. You need a good support system and a good childcare system, which is not the case here in the US. It's not affordable. It's great. Well, it's great if you can afford it and if you can find the play the spot to have that. But I think that it helps a lot knowing that your children are well taken care of long enough in the days that you can actually go to work, come back, and then have that balance.
Yes, exactly. And that was really, really great in Sweden, I must say. And it is also not as good, but it's okay in Leipzig. I mean, it's not in every part of Germany it's good, but in Leipzig it's okay. So we also have, afternoon care of the children when we're in elementary school and stuff like that. So that helps a lot.
That's very important. And I was just going to
Yeah.
say that it's very rare, at least here in the US, where during a PhD people can afford to have children.
Yes.
It's very rare. Typically people have kids during their postdoc or, even a little bit after, depending on when it they can quote unquote afford it. I
Yeah.
think the affordability of childcare here in the US is a whole other, it's a different spectrum. So you might have Sweden, Germany, and then the US trailing back somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back a little bit to that internship that you did in Tui Schwartz lab in Copenhagen. What led you to go there initially?
Well, initially it was actually a coincidence that I got to be there. So I went to Annette Beck-Sickinger. She was a professor, relatively new professor in Leipzig in biochemistry here. She's also working in GPCRs and PY receptors. And I asked her, I want to go somewhere for my internship because it belongs to the studies. Do you know somebody where I could go to? And first she thought of somebody who's doing glycosylation analysis, so but that didn't work out, and that's how I in the end landed got to be in Tui Schwartz lab, because yeah, I know this other person and he's working on GPCRs, so you can go there. So that's how it started. It was a coincidence in the end.
Wow, when he's wonderful. I've met him before, and he's a really nice guy.
Yes.
Then, when did you first hear about GPCRs?
Well, I assumed during my studies already. I mean, because I had lots of biochemistry lectures and we also were talking about GPCRs and GPCR signaling. But that's not what got me started. It really was this time in Copenhagen that got me excited, and the spirit there was really, I think it was a great time. I was very young, I was 22, and it was great.
I love it. I love it. So you finished your postdoc in Sweden. You come back to Leipzig to have your current position and be a group leader.
Yes. So, and also to finish that project. So the funding was originally for 3 years. And it was, we kind of made a deal, okay, you can do the postdocs for 2 years and then, but you have to come back and, you know, make that properly, finish that project. So that's what I did. And, but it was on trace amine receptors and they are really, really hard to work with, I think. And I got all these metabolomics, metabolites, yeah, ideas in my head. So that's why I did not continue on the trace amine receptors, but tried to apply for different kind of funding. And it took some time before I got more funding. I got a little bit of funding from the university medical faculty here. They have kind of the startup funds. And then finally, I succeeded also in getting funding, my funding, just my funding for metabolite sensing GPCRs and their role in, yeah, regulating metabolism, basically.
I love it. I love it.
Yes.
Are you going to be at the meeting, I think, in, I think it's in March or April, about GPCRs and metabolism?
Yes, in Birmingham. Yes,
yes.
I just registered. Yes.
That's
I'm going
fantastic.
to go there.
I may or may not be able to make it there, but Dr. GPCR is going to be, or is going to be, a media partner for the organizer. So very excited about that. Sounds
Yeah, I'm
like a
also
great.
very excited about that meeting. It's kind of, yeah, I do have to go there.
Sounds like an interesting meeting. Yeah, since coming from the US, it's a little bit more difficult to just fly over for a day and a half, or I think it's 2 days maximum.
Yes.
But from when you're in Europe, it's a hop away almost.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, this is a couple of hops extra, but I hope I can make it. I would love to be able to go there. All right, so you finally got your funding and you're working on how metabolites act through GPCRs on the metabolism. Tell us a little bit more, or what can you tell us a little bit about the project that you're working on? And then I'm interested in hearing more about your favorite GPCR in this area.
Yeah, so what we currently are working on most is the succinate receptor, because there's a lot of different or opposing reports about the function of succinate and about what it does through the receptor, but not only through the receptor. And the receptors, it's GI and GQ coupled, but not everybody can actually see GQ coupling. So we were really trying to understand that better. And when I started working on metabolite sensing GPCRs, I first cloned them, all of them, or not me alone, but we all together did. And we expressed them in just hex cells and did immunofluorescent analysis. And then we saw that this receptor, you know, it makes dots all the time. It makes little dots inside the cells. So it's not on the membrane only. And it's, you know, however you look at it, it's always mainly in intracellularly. So I thought, okay, if it's always there, it must be that it can signal from there. So that's something that we try to follow up and try to understand better. That's our main, or one of our main questions right now. Yes.
Interesting. Please, I didn't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, when we first got the funding, what we were interested in and what I had been working on for a very long time are the hydroxycarboxylic acid receptor family. So it's three receptors, one activated by lactate, one by ketone body, 3-hydroxybutyrate. And the third was known to be activated by 3-hydroxyoctanoic acid, which is, you know, formed in beta oxidation of fatty acids. And only humans and great apes have the HCA3 receptor. And that was something that always, you know, we were through the Max Planck Institute, we got all the genomic DNA of different kinds of primates and apes. So we actually cloned also all those receptors from those apes and analyzed them. And I couldn't get my head around, you know, why it can be that only humans and great apes have this receptor. And we tested a lot of compounds and different things to see if we find a reasonable explanation from experimental data. And in the end, we succeeded. We found that the phenylalactic acid, which is present in fermented food, is an agonist. And that was super exciting. It was like, we were so happy and it all fell into place. It was, yeah, that was the really, really cool time in the lab and really cool, yeah, to finally better understand that for me also.
I think it's fascinating because, you know, we don't we think we know things about GPCRs or well enough, but then you come on board and you talk about metabolites and how they act through GPCRs, and you just mentioned fermented foods, and I was thinking of sauerkrauts. And I never thought that, there was a metabolite that would activate a GPCR. I didn't think about it actually. And now that you mention it, everything we do or everything is at some point there is a GPCR involved. And we
Yeah, I
just
think
don't
so
know
too.
enough.
And I think we do not know enough about the small molecules that are in our food. I mean, I'm not talking
Yeah.
about all the processed food and just,
Yeah.
protein and carbohydrates and lipids, but what the bacteria do in our cheese, in our
Yeah.
yogurt, in our
Yeah.
everything. Yeah,
That
sauerkraut, of course.
is so fascinating. I love it. I love it.
Yes.
I actually realized that I don't know anything about metabolite recognizing or binding GPCRs. Are there any, what's known actually? I'm interested in hearing more about what is known, and is there a review or any articles that are worth taking a look at to get a, higher level understanding of what we know about metabolite recognizing GPCRs?
Actually, there are quite some great reviews on metabolite sensing GPCRs. One, I think, is authored by Tue Schwartz also. So he also switched kind of or got into that field. I don't know whom of us was first, but yeah, and we know some things now. We know that there are free fatty acid receptors, some that are activated by short chain fatty acids like acetate or propionate. Or butyrate, which is also produced by bacteria in our gut. So they, when they ferment fiber in our food, there's a lot of these kind of metabolites. Well, there's a lot of GPCRs activated, or some GPCRs activated by amino acids. There's succinate and alpha ketoglutarate receptors. So you have in the mitochondria, we have this very central TCA cycle. Every biochemist
Yeah.
knows it by heart. And actually, two metabolites are activating GPCRs, and I think there are more. There must be more metabolites that we do not know yet that may act through GPCRs. It's just sometimes so difficult to understand and study that because the cells in which you study it are constantly producing metabolites that may activate or may not activate or influence in one way or another the receptor. So it's not, I think it's not known so much because it's more difficult to study it, but I think
Yeah.
there's a lot more to discover.
I agree. And I was just thinking about, and as you mentioned, Hex cells, when you try to first express your receptor in Hex cells, and then it sometimes, you mentioned, sometimes people can detect the GQ, sometimes others can't. And you're right, because we don't think about, at least I don't think about it, where you put the receptor in a Hex cell, it is still a cell that produces all sorts of metabolites. And then you have the types of food you give it, so the media, and you don't know what's
Yes.
in your media.
Yeah, mostly you do not, to some extent, but you do not know what the cell makes out of it.
Exactly.
And yeah,
Exactly.
it's not so easy.
It sounds like there is a need for better tools to better understand, characterize, and potentially discover new metabolites or new receptors that are recognized by metabolites.
Yeah. I think some receptors may actually be already deorphanized. So there is an agonist known, and this agonist may or may not occur in sufficient concentrations to activate the receptor. But for some GPCRs, I think there might be, yet another one that we do not know yet that could still be discovered. But I think, I mean, the big companies, or I don't know. Maybe not. I have never been in a company. Maybe they are still screening for compounds, or maybe not. But I think really that in the bacterial microbiota field, there's still a lot to
Yeah.
discover. And there
Yeah.
we really need good analytics and good LC-MS-based or GC-MS-based analysis to also distinguish between the isomers, so R and D, and R and S
L.
or L and D.
Yeah.
I think that matters for, I mean, for the HCA3, for example, it does matter if it's D or the L isomer.
Wow.
So,
Wow. Any other tools, or actually, if you had a magic wand, let me put it this way. Let's be creative here. If you had a magic wand and you can instantly make a tool available to actually differentiate or discover more compounds and or deorphanize GPCRs, or even identify new metabolites that bind known deorphanized GPCRs, what would that look like?
The
I know
magic
it's it
wand.
could, yes,
Ooh,
anything,
that's a
anything. So,
very, very complex question. What would I do? The magic wand. Well, yeah, I mean, if I could, just by looking, see metabolites, I think I would just be happy with the chemical structure for a start. If I look at kind of, maybe sauerkraut or at cheese or at some older traditional food in other cultures, or if I could just see what's in there, that would be good. Just, to sort it chemically to see if there's something that hasn't been known before. And I guess, yeah, then it's trial and error. Some compounds look like they should activate the receptor, but they don't. And I don't know how to solve that. Yeah, maybe by just looking at the GPCR, see which are the important amino acids for binding and, changing conformation, or yeah, I
No,
don't know.
I think it makes a lot of sense. If we were if you meant we were we started out by talking about metabolites in general, but then you had the fermented food example, and I think having a group of fermented foods, traditionally made fermented foods without any chemical, any additives, and then being able to classify the molecules that are in each of those foods and try to match them and see which one activates a group of GPCRs would be really interesting. But I think the difficulty, as you mentioned, is what cellular system to use, because then you have the system bias as well in there.
I mean, one example is the all the H-CARs. I mean, the before we were able to actually measure their activation in a very simple system, like in HEK cells or Schoch cells, we had to, optimize the medium and what we measure them in and grow them in for such a long time. Because if you have just, do your assay in normal medium, you produce so much lactate and stuff that you can't see an activation of the receptor anymore. And I think, that's something that always needs to be optimized depending on which kind of metabolite you're looking at. And that makes it a bit more difficult. And I don't know how to circumvent that because you have the cells and they metabolize. So.
And then they, you if you want to study your receptor, you have them, you have to put them in cells. If you put them in cells, you have to feed the cells, and then you have extra metabolites that you may or may not want to have in that medium.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly.
I'm trying to think about, are there any model systems that you could be using? So something more natural, something more like native cells with maybe some optimized media, anything that people typically use as tools to study these GPCRs.
What we try is just to reduce as much as possible. So just using PBS with glucose or PBS with glutamine. So really for the assay itself, reduce it as much as possible, and then try to play with the medium that we add to the cells in a way that we also influence metabolism with that. But it's never predictable what happens. So, I mean, if you think about succinate, for example, it's very central. And you think, okay, if I add glucose to the cells do glycolysis and then they do normal TCA cycle and everything is good. If you add glutamine, okay, they can still, do TCA cycle. They also produce succinate, but you wouldn't expect that there are big differences in succinate production, but they are. So there's a big difference in how much succinate is there, depending on what kind of fuel you have there. So yeah, I think minimizing the system or minimizing how you feed the cells is an option, and then really, yeah, mess with metabolism by inhibiting parts of it. Like, I don't know, you can inhibit TCA cycle to some extent, you can induce hypoxia and then, have more succinate, you can inhibit glycolysis, just tackle it that way.
Wow, sounds like a very delicate and difficult set of projects to work on because of the systems themselves. And you need cells, but then you have to work with whatever media, or you have to play around with the media, but also with the conditions to
Yes.
be able to measure. Wow, it sounds like a very fascinating yet very delicate and difficult system to work with.
Yeah, it's very exciting and it's a lot of frustration too, but I guess that's always if, yeah, people are working in the lab that things are not as well as they should be.
No, I agree. I agree. The other question I had, and I'm not, I again, I know not enough or not much about these GPCRs. Is there a link, a very well characterized, very well known link to specific metabolism diseases and metabolism linked to any of these GPCRs, where it's clear that it's either a mutation or it's anything directly associated, or there's hints only?
No, I think there's I do have to think about it, but I think there's no it's no direct mutation of one of the GPCRs known that causes the disease, but there are some reports that show a link between one or more of those receptors to obesity, type 2 diabetes, and these kind of things. So it does play a role in the progression of diseases. But I'm not aware of a single mutation that causes a problem.
Yeah, I would think since in the case of diabetes or these types of diseases, I'm thinking the system or the type of metabolites are already different, which is in turn acting on the receptor. And then that would mediate or help the progression of the disease
Yeah,
compared to a
that's.
healthy person. So if you take a healthy person versus a non-healthy and you look at their metabolites in their gut, the receptors might be the same, but the metabolites will be different. Hence, the receptor activity will be different.
Yes, and I think you even have to add one more step of complexity because it's not only in the gut that the metabolites are different because of the disease, but also because of the different bacteria that are there. So I think that adds like a whole different or whole very, very complex entity on top of the disease. Just that you have these different patterns of metabolites. And then what's first? Is the disease first or is the different microbiota first? I don't know if it's not like inherited disease.
I was just yesterday, I was listening to a podcast on YouTube. It's called Diary of a CEO, and it's this guy who interviews various experts. And yesterday was this, I think, gastroenterologist. And the guy was mentioning that it was about fecal transplants. And so he gave this example, which was very striking, is that you had a pair of identical twins, one obese, one not, and then they made a fecal transplant into mice of ev both people, and then the normal mice that got the fecal transplant of the fat twin started gaining weight. Nothing changed. I don't know. I didn't verify this. I didn't go and look at the publication, but just the example was, I think it was striking that there is something in your, there is this very clear indication and relationship between the gut and the brain and the metabolism. And I thought this was a very striking example.
Think I think there must be a lot in there that makes who we are, and that's also a little bit scary, I would say.
It is scary, which goes back to your point that we don't know exactly what comes first. Is it the disease? Is it the changes in metabolites? Is it the microbiome? It's a complex yet very fascinating topic.
Definitely.
All right, then let's go into the last segments of our podcast. I'm very curious to hear about You mentioned that, well, you stayed in academia and you mentioned previously that you didn't work in a company. Did it ever, when you, while you were doing your studies, was there any moment where you knew that you wanted to stay in academia or you didn't want to stay in academia? How did you end up staying in academia?
Applied for the postdoc positions. That was the first time when I could have, left academia because I could have gone to AstraZeneca in Manchester. But I didn't go there because I have two kids and they were 1 and 3 back then, and childcare is not as affordable there. So that's why I did not go or did not leave academia. And then I think, or when I have good days, I would say it's the best job ever being in academia because you get paid for actually thinking and, thinking whatever you want and reading and learning and teaching, and this combination of everything is it's really a great privilege, I would say. So yeah. I'm glad that I'm still in academia and that I can stay and can hopefully do some more thinking in the
Really great.
future. Yes.
No, I love it. And I think to your point, I don't think we talk about enough about, career choices based on family situations. Because it's hard to take on a job where you have children and the childcare is either not affordable or not existent. And all of these things factor in into the choices.
Yeah,
So
definitely.
thank you
And
for
I
bringing.
mean, and yes, and whatever is in your life, makes the decisions. I think I've never really been a good planner. I've never decided, I want to be have an academia career in academia, but it just in it I would not say it just happened, but I was lucky enough at some points to actually be able to stay, I would
Yeah,
say.
I love it.
Yes.
Where are the top three aha moments that you had as a scientist that shaped your career trajectory?
The top aha. Well, one is definitely the diphenylactate. That's, I think, number one. That's really, that took me, I would say, the whole project. I was working on that for about 10 years, from first, getting these receptors to actually being able to characterize them to finally, publish that manuscript. That was also very, very, very bad. It took 2 years from first submission to final acceptance
Wow.
in different journals. But yeah, that's something I'm really proud of, and that I really like the ideas and the stories we put into that manuscript. And the other aha moments. What I really like is the connection to think about GPCRs from this evolutionary perspective. To really, when I think about a new receptor or about receptors presented by other peoples, I often, do these PubMed, not PubMed, but NCBI searches, where I then do conservation analysis and check, okay, which species do have the receptors and which do not have it. And sometimes I think we do not use that enough to try to understand what a receptor might be for.
Yeah.
Because I mean, some species, they already went through evolution and got optimized. So if they do not need the receptor, so what's different for them? So that's a way I really like. And yeah, I would say, yeah, and the connection. I really this thinking about signaling and metabolism at the same time. It's kind of, GPCRs for me, GPCRs are communication. It's a way to
Yeah.
communicate. So it's cells tell other cells by signaling molecules what they should do. And if we think of metabolism as signal producing signaling molecules, I think that connection, that really, yeah, gets me
No, I love it.
excited. Yeah.
I think it's great, and I think from what I've heard, I think spending time in Tuohy Schwartz's lab, and which was a coincidence, that ignited that spark, but also being able to go away to Sweden and to that postdoc also kind of brought you to where you are today because you have the GPCR and then you have the metabolites,
Yes.
and I think it's really fascinating. All right, any
And the
advice?
evolution. And the
Yes,
evolution. I really like that.
I think it's a central point, and we don't think about it enough. Maybe we could learn more about our current human GPCRs if we look back at their ancestry and see where they evolved from.
Yes, I think so too. And I think it's much easier these days because so many genomes are available online. It's been
Yeah.
much harder, like in the beginning of the 2000s, when there were not so many genomes and you had to, kind of do the sequencing yourself if you had genomic DNA samples, for example.
Wow. Well,
Yeah.
that's already a messy endeavor just to get the sequence that you can now
It's
download.
Yes, now it's easy.
I love it. Any advice for junior scientists who would like to contribute to the field?
Just to contribute to GPCR field or
Yes, GPCR or metabolites or the combination of both to science.
I think the most important part is that you're excited about your projects, and that's I think the only important thing. Get excited, find a project that you get excited about, and then you have the intrinsic motivation and the drive to follow that. I think you don't need more. Just find your space that is
Yeah.
that makes you happy.
I agree, and I think it's important to find that space, and you do it by, for example, going abroad, by reading broadly, by meeting people, and because you never know what sparks your interest. You don't know what sparks your interest until you try out different things.
Exactly, I totally agree. And I think, try different things. That's maybe the only advice one can give to
Yeah.
say, try different things. I've tried also during my studies, I also tried microbiology. So I went to a lab where they did bacterial cultures that degrade herbicides. And it's a cool thing, really, but it was just not my, it did not spark my interest. So, yeah.
It. When you have job openings in your team, where can people find you?
They can just find it on my on the website, and they can find me on LinkedIn and ResearchGate and on X and wherever. But I do not have job openings so often because I do not get grant funding
Yet.
yet. Yes.
Exactly.
So
But if somebody comes with their funding, then that's
definitely. I
another
mean,
question.
yes,
Yeah,
definitely.
and we also have on in the ecosystem a job board where you can fill out a Google form, and then the job board it'll appear on the job board. So that's
I love that platform. It's great that you founded it and it's bringing
Thank
together
you.
so many great expertises and people, and it's fantastic. Thank you for
Thank you.
that.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Evolving towards, well, now we started the Dr. GPCR University. So our first course is going to be with Dr. Terry Kinnakin about pharmacology. It's an introduction to pharmacology and to drug discovery, which is a very exciting course. And we're trying to put in as much content as possible into the ecosystem. My dream is that when people wake up in the morning, they don't go on Facebook, Twitter, or X, whatever. They go to the ecosystem and see, okay, what happened in the GPCR field since I went to sleep in the past 8 hours. That's my dream. That's what I would like to get to. And we haven't gotten a chance to ex or not to exp we have the possibility in the ecosystem. People haven't been using it that much, but we have groups, forums. I would love it if people, once they check their news in the ecosystem in the morning, if they have a question or they're looking for a collaborator or they're looking to for a protocol, they would go into the ecosystem, post it on the board, and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And then have these exchanges in there instead of, limiting themselves. I feel like when I was a student, it was very difficult to get answers to my questions beyond my little circle. So it was my lab, maybe a couple of other labs that we collaborated with, and it wasn't as expanded. So I'm hoping that with the ecosystem, we can get to a point where you can ask anyone who works on GPCRs. Maybe somebody, put together a really cool media to study metabolites, and you don't know it, but then it's in the ecosystem. They're in the ecosystem, and you can ask them.
It's a fantastic dream. And I hope it comes true.
I
It
hope
would
so
make
too.
the life of a lot of young researchers in DPCR field much easier, definitely.
Yeah, I've heard horror stories. One last thing, I've heard a horror story where someone was doing a postdoc in a lab, and for 2 years they were trying to get this project going until one day another person in the same lab passes by and says, "Oh, that doesn't work. Somebody tried it for 5 years." And you're like, "Ugh, would have been nice to know this from the get-go, to at least know it and then maybe come up with a different idea or come up with a different project." So that's exactly what I'd like to absolutely avoid and help
Definitely,
people get through
because it
that.
frustrates people and makes people, right people, leave science if they work for 5 years on a project that somebody else has been working for 5 years unsuccessfully.
Exactly. And we want to better understand GPCR biology, and I hope the ecosystem is a central piece of meeting for people across the world.
Yeah, I really think it's on a good way.
Thank you. Thank you. Claudia, thank you so much. I really had fun.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm going to stop recording. Don't go anywhere. We're going to let people wonder what we're talking about after we stop recording. All right. Thank you. Can I ask you for a favor? Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Many of you come back and watch our videos but aren't subscribed. Having more subscribers will help us get you more content. Also, mark your calendars and join us in person for the inaugural Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs meeting taking place in Birmingham in the UK between April 22nd and 23rd. Thank you for joining us and listening to this Dr. GPCR podcast episode. We would like to thank our guests, our team members, Attila, Ines, Montserrat, Ivana, Andreina, and Balint. If you like our podcast, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can also leave us a testimonial at drgpcr.com/testimonials and subscribe to our monthly newsletter today. Another way to support us is to share your favorite Dr. GPCR program with your colleagues and network. With any questions or suggestions, email us at hello@drgpcr.com. And until next time, stay safe.